taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I am your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my homies, Mr. Patrick Irvin and Mr. Jamie Bashan. Remember, the Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can get more in-depth information about the organization. And while you're on the website, make sure you click on the tab that says The Code. That way you can go and explore the codes of conduct that are created by PAX Inc. And these codes are codes of black social engineering that will help black America work more as a cohesive unit. So make sure you check that out. Also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about me and Pat. Forget Jamie. No, I'm just playing. But learn more about me, Pat, Jamie, and all your guests on the Freedom Train. Subscribe to the Freedom Train on the Google Play Music and iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to the Freedom Train on Google Play Music and iTunes. That way you get episodes coming straight to your phone. Like our Freedom Train Facebook page. And also follow the Freedom Train on Instagram and Twitter at Freedom. Well, on Instagram at Freedom Train Network and Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Fellas.
What it do?
What it look like?
What it is?
I'm not black. I'm OJ.
Okay.
And I ain't washed my body for 40 days.
Ooh. And then Sammy Sosa looked like somebody painted him eggshell white.
Yo, Sammy looks like he's been embalmed, man. Sammy's a motherfucking mummy. Like, that dude is not human. He's a fucking mummy, man.
Hey, man, I'm listening to ESPN Radio. Buddy on the radio say he looked like a... they put three pictures up on him on the internet, and it looked like one of the Metropolitan ice creams went like from brown to white to pink. And like Sammy Sosa looked like a little piglet now.
Man, Sammy looks like a goddamn. Looked like he got straight up out of the casket. That's what he looks like.
Sammy Sosa and Lil Kim are the poster couple for black self hate.
Yeah, fuck up couple. That's ugh.
Hey, what's gonna kill the kids though? What's gonna kill the kids? They gonna go back and look at them old home run races him and Mark McGuire had in the '90s and be like, hey, who the hell is that Mark McGuire having a home run chase with? Like, that's a black dude. They like Sammy Sosa. Nah, that ain't Sammy Sosa. Sammy Sosa pink. That's a black dude right there. Like, nah, bruh. I'm telling you that's Sammy. Nah.
I'm motherfucking fuchsia right now. Like, Sammy looks bad, man. I don't know. Like, and I don't want to talk about it because dude might have a condition. He, like, might be sick or something. I don't know.
Man,
maybe he ain't telling
Sammy, us. Sammy, man, come on, Sammy.
Dog, it ain't that much skin bleaching in the world. What is he trying to be, transparent? Like, that's Sammy. The next step at this point. See-through.
Jamie, a week after Sammy Sosa retired from baseball, he turned eggshell white.
Nah, the next color for him is just transparent. People gonna be able to see his lungs and everything. Like, that dude is, he's about to be clear.
Let's look like one of them underworld characters right now, man.
But
that's real, man. But you got, I mean, the self-hatred is real, man, but that's one of the biggest issues in our community. And, you know, talking about self-hatred and lack of self-identity and all these things, not necessarily to try to jump into the fray and jump on the bandwagon of what other people are talking about, because of course we always try to come from different perspectives. But this Jay-Z, the 444 album, I haven't heard the album, so I can't talk about the album. But I have heard the story of OJ song and saw the video. I just want to kind of get, Pat, I guess we'll start with you, kind of get your thoughts on the video, then Jamie, then we'll swing it back around to me. But kind of get y'all thoughts on the video. And what y'all thought about the message. But me particularly, not necessarily the whole song, because I don't have an issue with the whole song, but like the OJ part, though, you know, and some of the stuff. Like, how did you, let me not try to put it in the box. What did you think about it, Pat?
I mean, I think you got to separate the video from the song. So, like, the video was filled with symbolism. You know, there was a lot going on in the video in terms of the way it was drawn, the scene, the colors, everything like that. You know, the video definitely had a lot to decipher and could generate a whole lot of conversation in terms of, you know, the image that black people have had and still had in a lot of respects and various other things of that nature. The song itself, I mean, you know, like I said before the show started, I think I was kind of tainted by the hype. I'm not a super Jay-Z lover. Let me go ahead and say that for the record. But, you know, I will admit he makes some nice songs. So, you know, I'm going in and everybody's talking about, you know, this is one of the pro-black anthem and this is one of the deepest songs that I've ever seen and blah, blah, blah. And this has to be on the top five greatest black songs list and all that. So I'm going in hype, expecting something real. And then, you know, I'm listening to the song and I'm just waiting for it to get there. And it kind of never got there for me. So, you know, he has some nice little pointers in there about how to take $1 million and turn it into $2 million, and, you know, some decent lines about how to take $2 million and turn it into 25, and some decent lines about business and economics, especially from his individual perspective. I didn't see any real reference to how somebody like myself could go from having $0 to having $1 million, to turn to $2 million, to turn to four, to turn to eight.
Without
selling drugs, doing other things that are harmful to the community. And I didn't see a whole lot in there about breaking things down on a communal level, on a community-based level, in terms of community economics and things like that. And then some of the other things I saw, you know, while they could be translated if we wanted to stretch it, in my opinion, it would be just that, a stretch. So in my opinion, you know, I'm not saying Jay wasn't dropping knowledge. You know, if you want some basic knowledge that you should pretty much already know anyway as an adult about how to take $5 and turn it into $6, or take $1 million and turn it into two, and I'm assuming if you got $1 million, you know how to get two. You know, beyond little things like that, I just, you know, I think people are looking for something, and they've kind of assigned this song to that status. I don't know. I wasn't impressed. I mean, the video was impressive. The lyrics to the song, I wasn't impressed. I wasn't moved. It didn't rock with me. And to clarify real quick, look, I'm not ignorant to history, because that's one of the first things people going to say. I'm not ignorant to business. I'm not ignorant to economics. Like, I'm familiar with all of those things. The fact of the matter is, the shit he was saying was very simple and superficial and very common. So I just wasn't moved. Like, it wasn't groundbreaking for me. It wasn't on that level. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, David Banner been screaming that shit for like the last 3 years. But, you know, never. But, hey. Go ahead, Jamie. What you think?
All right, so mine's a little bit different. I'll start off with this. For anybody that says this is like some pro-black album, this, that, and the other, that person's an idiot, don't listen to him. I'll say that for number one. Because if you go in and you listen to this album with that perception, you will walk away unimpressed like Pat was. Overall, this album, I think this is the most introspective album he's made since Volume 1. If you actually listen to this album, like, the story of OJ is probably one of my favorite songs on the album. I could do away with that one. To me, that's just a dope single to get everybody attracted to the rest of the album. But if you actually break down the album, you listen to what Jay-Z's saying, a lot of it is just about accountability. Like, he really goes in on himself in this album, dissecting himself piece by piece, calling out himself on his own bullshit and stuff like that, telling a lot of stories, giving a lot of insight into his personal life that most of us aren't even privy to. So to me, when I listen to the album, it reminds me of that Volume 1 Jay-Z. You know, he had the joint Faith Evans on there telling the story how he shot his brother. Like, he talks about his mother coming out of the closet on this album, his relationship with Beyonce, you know, kids. And if anybody want to really, like, the story of OJ, I don't know why it's getting so much attention when there's so much better songs on that album than that one. That, to me, is probably the bottom two on the album. You got Marcy Me on there. That song alone, I can imagine myself in 10 years arguing with my daughter, like, hey, she playing on some little music in her age, and I'm like, yo, that ain't real hip hop. This some real music, and I'll play Marcy Me because that song right there, that's probably it's gonna age so well when we go back to it. That's gonna be a classic. But I hate everybody's focusing on the story of OJ when there's so many better songs on this album. Overall, it's a great album. Story of OJ song, just to kind of pay attention to that one in a second. It was very simplistic. You got to understand who Jay-Z is. Jay-Z will give you a 101 bars, but Jay-Z's always had a knack for dumbing his stuff down to where people can understand it. So he dumbed a lot of things down in that song, and because he's such a mainstream artist, he's married to goddamn Beyonce, for crying out loud, anything he says, people are going to take it and multiply it times 100. So people who really don't aren't conscious of their surroundings at all, they're you know, this was like bright light shit to them, like this amazed them. But to, you know, people who actually are conscious, who understand their surroundings, who understand, you know, some of the simplest shit that he was talking about on that song, we're not impressed by it. I just look at it as a song. I didn't even look at it as some black tribute, this and whatever nonsense. So to me, I'm a fan of Jay-Z, so I might be biased. I thought the album was super dope. I don't know why everybody's paying attention to the story of OJ. It's really not that great of a song. It's better songs on the album, so I'll stay with that.
All right, now, me, first of all, I don't think Jay-Z is that damn deep, me personally.
He can be.
Hey, Jay, to me, I'm just saying, I'm going to be real, like, I've listened to a lot of Jay-Z. Like, I like to listen to rappers talk. Like, I want to see how smart you are. Like, I want to, like, Jay-Z is slick. Jay-Z has one of his greatest assets is his gift of gab. Absolutely. Jay-Z can say nothing very well, and that's what he does a lot. He says nothing very, he can give it to you in a way that you can imagine a vivid story in your head, but he still ain't saying shit. And I think that's what people get caught up into I guess you could say the flair. He throws some pixie dust in your face or whatever you want to call it, and you pay attention to that. You're not really getting down deep into it because, the stuff that Jay-Z is saying in that song, like, Dr. Claude Anderson has been saying since the 1970s. And so, to me, on one end, that shows that we got a problem in our damn community. Like, if Jay-Z is the one that make people say, well, maybe we should put our money together and work, we've lost. We've lost. It's over. Because if that's what you want, because he had one line in the song. I was paying attention. He was talking about taking your money and buying up your block, right? Now, one of the main things you hear people from his community saying is what? He don't use his money to help his people in his block that he grew up. So, I mean, I hear you, Jay. I hear, and I'm listening, but I don't think he that deep. And then, to me, and not necessarily to harp on, and not saying it's a big thing, but people are, a lot of the commentary around that song is surrounding O.J. Simpson. All I'm saying about that part and that line is the dope man can't call out the dude who... Cause, well, I'm just ask y'all, what's worse? I asked Pat earlier, but I'm going to ask you, Jamie. What's worse to the community? The black athlete who pretends like he's not black, or the black drug dealer who becomes a rapper and still rap about selling drugs for 20 years?
I'm going to say the goddamn internet scammers for that C. I hate those fucking bastards. They're worse than drug dealers. I fucking hate internet scammers. Oh, try this, really? Fuck you guys. But anyway, my bad. I went off on a tangent.
No, I mean, because let me say this. My thing for saying that is not if that's where the conversation is going to go. If that's where the thought process, and we're going to go demonizing OJ for being a sellout, which he was, then you got to demonize Jay-Z. You can't give Jay-Z a pass for being a dope man and then rapping about selling dope for 20 years. Like, there's no pass for that. You can't get that. All right, story of Jay-Z is next then, right?
Yeah, he addresses that on the album. He, you know, his own contradictions, how he mislead the youth. And he kind of gets into it. But here's the thing with Jay-Z, man. Jay-Z is like, when you say the word hustler, I think Jay-Z embodies that. Of course he ain't all this shit he was and said this, this, and other. But he had, like you said, he has a gift of gab. He knows how to sell records, X, Y, and Z. He knows how to make a hot song, et cetera, et cetera. So I just look at it from a musical standpoint. I refuse to look at it from anything other than music. Like, I get what everybody's saying, you know, the cultural references. That I get that. But when I listen to, like, a Jay-Z, when I listen to music, I try to listen to it like I would hear, like I would read poetry or listen to the opera and classical music. I just try to enjoy the music and how it makes me feel. Now, once you take it out of that concept, yes, absolutely right, Joe. This dude sold, you know, he shot his own fucking brother and he sold crack. Like, come on, you ain't going to really, okay, you made it big, but X, Y, and Z. So I get the references, but when I look at it, it's hard for me to look at it anything past music. I just trained my mind to do that. Because once you look at it past music, we know half these rappers ain't selling no drugs. Like, come on, man. These dudes ain't never sold drugs. If they sold drugs like they really did, they would be in jail or dead by now. Like, half these dudes rapping about lies that aren't existed. But I get the contradiction. You can't call one out and doesn't the other. I get
that. Yeah, well, that's all I'm saying on that is if you're gonna try to call OJ out on his, then you actually don't have a leg to stand on. But at the same time, I do think that we have to be real with ourselves and understand that it is more than just music to a lot of people.
Agree.
And it's more than entertainment. And remember, the community that it hurts the most is ours. The community that divides the most is ours. Like I'm before you got on, I was talking to Pat, and I'm trying to find a link and send it to y'all. But I'm watching a video on YouTube yesterday of this father and his son who's critiquing the Jay-Z's video. And the son came, like, the conclusion of the video, the son came away with, well, I don't even know how they got to it, but the son came to the conclusion that it's okay for white people to call black people niggas. And him, he said it's okay to get for a white person to call you a nigga as long as there's an A on the end and not an ER. Because, and people are so, all right, well, let me just say this for y'all people who stupid out there. And I'm, yes, for you stupid people, if you don't like it, don't be stupid. But white southern slave owners said nigga because they white southern slave owners. White northern slave owners said nigger because they're white northern slave owners. Nigga isn't new. Black people did not invent nigga. That is not a term of endearment. Nigga is only a country-ass way of saying nigger. So I'm telling all you white folk who listen, all you black people with white friends and all you white folk who listen, I'm just saying for me, period. You call me an E-R or A, I'm kick you dead in your face. There's no difference. And y'all black folk better get on it. Nigga is not a term of endearment. All that means is your ass is pronouncing it like you're from the South. White slave masters said nigga. Now I'm saying that because this is the conclusion that the son came away from his commentary with his father about the video. Now, the father was on the other side saying, well, we shouldn't say this and say that. And the father was kind of like, critiquing it because the father has years and kind of looking through some of the bull. But the father's takeaway from it was, well, black people need to strive to be better Americans. And I'm like, well, you crazy as hell, too, because you're telling black people to work on being better Americans is the same thing as telling a woman who's in an abusive relationship to go home and work it out.
I mean, I just don't. And Jamie, the way Jamie looks at it is probably the best way to look at it. To me, this song doesn't provide enough content for those level of conversations. I mean, the hook is right. Basically him saying nigga 32 times with a different word in front of it. I mean, you know, like, so I just don't see this song as having that much in it in terms of content.
Right.
For us to really even be talking about it on this level, and you know, Jamie, probably is the way we need to be looking at all songs until they transcend that viewpoint. There have been some songs out there where, you know, just like poetry, typically you enjoy poems. I enjoy poems. I listen to them all the time. But every now and then, you'll hear a poem that transcends just being a poem. You know, a poem that becomes a certified message because it's because of the content and the emotion and everything else is jammed into it. This song, in my opinion, doesn't have enough of anything to warrant this type of conversation. I mean, okay, you could take the hook and have some sort of conversation, light nigga, dark nigga, fake nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, poor nigga, house nigga, feel. You could, okay, you can do something. You can have a nice little 2 or 3 second conversation about that. You know, well, no matter what, you're still a nigga. Yeah, that's true. All right, conversation over. But the rest of this shit that we got going on behind this song, you know what's more important than throwing away money at a strip club? Credit. Wow, thanks, Jay-Z. That is life-altering advice. I never would have thought that.
You're an idiot.
But here's the thing, though. Jay-Z is so mainstream. He's transcended, like, the hip-hop culture, the street culture he's come from. This dude is a world, international icon. So even him saying that simplistic line, which clearly if you don't know credit is important by now, you're just dumb. Like, we know that. But, I mean, there are a lot of dumbass people out there who actually hear this and it's like, oh, man, it is credit's more important than throwing my money at a strip club. Of course it is. But it's just Jay-Z has a way of saying, like, he has that gift to gab. He has a way of saying things. And his level of popularity is what makes people go, you know, gasp. And because it's really not a new concept. There's nothing, you know, profound or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's common goddamn sense what it really is.
True. No, but I think you're 100%. Well, I do think Jamie's 100% on point when he says that a lot of this is fueled by his popularity. We saw the same thing when Beyonce did her thing, like, last year or the year before last or whatever, where everybody was losing their fucking mind about her Lemonade video and then about her Super Bowl performance. And those of us that are actually involved in that, study this shit and that, pay attention, were kind of like, hey, it was nice, but don't make more out of it than what it really is. Yeah. You know, that's, it's kind of the same thing happening
same
right
thing.
Now.
Yeah.
But see, the thing is, to me, I think that the damaging part or the bad part that all of this shows, and it's not necessarily, and there's not nothing that Jay-Z did, it's the community. Like,
right.
Like, if you, the black, this is not at, remember, this is not at Jay-Z, but I do stand by any statements that I said, because I don't think he's that deep. I still don't. But this is, this, the uproar is not Jay-Z's fault. It's the community's fault.
No,
because
I agree
the community. The community act like okay, well, since he said it, because as a matter of fact, I was listening to something, and a dude literally said, what the hell? Well, now, since Jay-Z said it, I guess people going to start getting their money right now, because remember, Jay-Z was the one that told people to take off their throwbacks. But listen, but think about that. That means our community is doomed. That means we are clearly doomed if we're waiting on Jay-Z to give us instructions on what the hell we're supposed to do when you got people every day giving you information on what you can do to help your condition. All you got to go to is YouTube. It's so much free information that our black scholars, people who have dedicated their lives to studying and practicing these things, and your I understand Jay-Z is popular. But popular doesn't mean community that, okay, we should hang on to it everywhere. Ain't y'all the same people who ain't supposed to be worshiping or be like having idols and stuff like that? Ain't that in some of their books and stuff? But, I mean,
No, I mean, I agree with you, though, Joe. And that's the point that I meant to bring up that I just forgot, thinking about the you know, because like I said, I got these lyrics in front of me, and I'm just looking at them, just kind of chuckling to myself as I'm looking at the lyrics and comparing them to some of the comments and some of the things that were said to me. And again, it's not that the lyrics are bad. You know, the lyrics are, you know, they're decent. They're okay. You can definitely get something out of them. Like, my thing is, if you're a 25 and older adult and this is your first time hearing anything that he said in this song, then you know your community
wrong.
And your family has failed you.
But I mean, go back to Trick Daddy's America song. It's deep, way deeper than this.
But
way
I mean,
deeper
that,
than this.
But I mean, the fact of the matter is, and I do feel like 100%, like I said, I'm not a Jay-Z fan by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not a Jay-Z hater either. But so, you know, my comments are not directed at Jay-Z as a person. I'm definitely looking at the community when I say the things that I say. You know, it's definitely a conversation, in my opinion, that's geared towards the community. Like, I don't understand why we as a people, as a culture group, as a community, are so easily excited by celebrities giving us representative victories or moral victories or you know, whatever sort of fake-ass superficial victory that they want to give us. But then at the same time, when people on the ground level are actually trying to do real things, we're heavily critical of them. You know what I'm saying? So I just, the entire conversation from a communal standpoint to me is frustrating. Even the fact that we have to have a show talking about a song called The Story of O.J. that's really only got one line that references O.J.
Right.
Simpson in the whole
right.
fucking song.
Right, so it's clickbait off top.
You know what I'm saying? And again, it's not a shot against Jay-Z. Jay-Z doing what he does. This is what fucking Jay-Z does. He does things that gets people talking. Regardless of how you feel about him, he is very good at staying relevant and keeping his name on people's tongues. And the song, again, it's not the greatest song in the world, but it's really not a bad song. I just don't think it's worth all of the praise and all of the other things that it's getting. Like, it's not that great to me.
Because I listened to it again earlier today, and, I mean, he's saying some good stuff, and it's just, my thing is, it's not that deep, and if this is your, especially if you're an adult, I could see if I was 17, or 16, or 15, but even in that means your parents have failed you in those departments. Like, why don't the adults know this, and why aren't the adults teaching this to their children? Like, it's important. I shouldn't find out about credit when I'm 30. Like, God damn.
Hey, here's one thing about that that's kind of fucked up Jay-Z did. He might not have knew he was doing it at the time, but OJ's up for parole here pretty soon. And guess who's the headline? He's got a goddamn song with the N-word in it 800 goddamn times. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of a bad look, Jay-Z. OJ might not get paroled because of that song. That's fucked up.
I mean...
I'm just saying, like, I thought about that the other day. I was just like, damn, this dude up for parole. And Jay-Z dropped a whole song called The Story of O.J.
But that's my thing, though. Like, if you're gonna call it The Story of O.J. and, you know, start off with, well, O.J. don't know he, O.J. over there trying to pretend like he ain't black. Yeah, but you sold drugs to the community. What you did was worse. Shut your ass up.
Yeah, see your point there.
No, you definitely got a point.
I mean, I'm just saying, all of because when I first, that probably was my first thought that popped in my head when I first heard the song, like, sat down and digested it. I was like, well, ain't you the dope man?
Well, I'll be honest, like, my first thought was just disappointment because my hopes were so high for it because of what everybody had said. So my first thought was, like, this is it? Like, you know, like, I want my money back. And then I had to remember, I'm listening to it on YouTube. I ain't pay no money. But, I mean, you know, like, I did go and look up some of the interviews that he did. And he talked about the song being about how us as a culture, we need to have a plan and we need to push it forward and how we need to utilize our money properly and this, that, and the third. And even that did kind of tip me a little bit more. Because in terms of the song, I can't dismiss it as just a song. But if you want to talk about, like, what you're actually saying and what you actually believe, now I get to the point where I'm like, okay, OJ, I need to see something now, soon. You know, otherwise, you're going to get pushed in the Umar box because you and your wife got enough money to reshape an entire region of the country in terms of the black community. So I need to see more from you than a couple $1,500 scholarships and a company that employ a whole bunch of white people that you're trying to get black people to purchase from under the guise that it's a black-owned company. I need to see a little bit more from you than that. But outside, but if we just stick it to the song, if we just keep it to the song, I really don't have no beef with Jay-Z in
right.
terms of the song. My beef is with the community and their response to it, acting like it's the great. They act like we haven't had a Dr. Clark or a Dr. Ben or a Dr. Amos Wilson or you know, like we haven't had these major historical people, historians that we've had. And then even on top of that, they act like we haven't had artists like a Pharoah Monch or Talib Kweli or Mos Def or Common Sense back before he lost his sense and just became old common-ass, regular-ass rapper. Or, you know what I'm saying? That, you know, like they act like we haven't had these hip-hop artists that have promoted this message before.
Man, look, the opening track on Dead Prez, his album, The Wolves, when they're talking about how they put they stuck a blade in the ice, and the Eskimos would stick blades in the ice and put blood on the blade, and the wolf would lick the blood, and licking the blood is thinking it's actually licking more blood. When it's licking the blade, it's thinking it's licking more blood, and it actually kills itself. And it's talking about how the black community, in a sense, is doing that to itself with all the things that the dominant culture gives us and shoves down our throat. And it's just that. You have to go listen to it. Dead Prez album, Let's Get Free, the first track. We have been getting, like, David Banner have been screaming this stuff for the last three. Hell, even Killer Mike on his little campaign going around with One United has been talking about this. Like, let's stop acting like this is new, people. Like, Jay-Z is not the prophet. Jay-Z, like, if we're waiting on Jay-Z to uplift us, once again, we've lost. If he is the person that you have to get your orders from to move forward, we've lost.
But here's the bigger picture, Joe, and just kind of put it in perspective. Some of these same people are subscribed to a religion, and they wait to a guy who says something that's basically common sense in order for them to go out and act on something that's on their own individual lives. So I see a lot of times people post a video, oh, look, this pastor preached, like, that ain't preaching, that's just common sense. Yo, like, don't sleep with somebody else's wife. Like, why is that, like, a prophetic word? Like, that's common, but, you know, for them to hear, they just take it and run with. So you got to understand, a lot of people already had that concept that they got to go get the information from somebody else, somebody that they trust, somebody that is popular or meaningful to their life. Then, if they get it from them, they'll process the information and act upon it. So that's probably the hardest part I had to struggle with, you know, kind of seeing people like, yo, this is common sense, but it is what it is.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I agree, but once again, that means wow. We're going to have to, like, I may have to agree with one thing Umar said. We might have to have a little civil war, and those who really give a damn just get together, and everybody else who don't just be with themselves, because I don't know, man, because you're not going to be able to truly be liberated existing like that. That's just not going to happen.
Well, I mean, like minds find each other and they work together. You know, to be honest, I don't concern myself with the black people that don't want to do nothing. You know, and I think that's been one of the things that's really kept me involved in the work that I do. You know, and I think that's something that we're all going to have to come to accept. We just got to stop worrying about the people that don't want to move like we move. You know, you, like I always say, if you start building, you know, if a house needs to be built, and clearly the black community needs to start building a house, we don't fucking start waking people up before we build a house. That's a waste of energy, and by the time they actually wake up, you know what I'm saying, we could have been and built the house. What you do is you just start building. I ain't met a person yet that can sleep next to an active construction zone. So you just start hammering away. You just start putting stuff where they need to be, sawing, cutting, banging, moving, mailing, and doing what you need to do. People will wake up and they'll come help, and those that don't, well, hell, they sleep anyway, so they ain't in the way. They ain't a problem. The only ones I'm concerned about are the ones that are actively moving against me. And those ones are actually, you know, the vast majority of the time that we complain, we're complaining about the inactive people. there really aren't a vast majority of people that are actively, like, consciously, purposely moving against things that we're doing to better the community. So I say at this juncture, you know, we need to get in the habit of just ignoring motherfuckers that don't want to move. You don't want to move, fine. Stay your ass over there. We over here.
As we go into our next topic, I want to elaborate on what you just said, Pat. God damn it, son. You spoke some words just then. You don't even know it. You're smart, but you don't even know it yet. You don't even know it yet. Go ahead, Joe. What you got?
Trust me. I'm with you. I agree. And I'm with you. And I agree. But it's like, We do still see the overall effect, though. And do we ignore the overall effect? Or, I mean, you know, that's probably another discussion for another time. We won't have that much time. But, you know, we do still see the overall effect and what it has on our people. And it's hard to turn a blind eye when you got love for your people. So
it is.
That's all I'm going to say.
No, you're right, and I would agree with that. It is definitely a struggle, but if you're looking at the bigger picture, you're looking at what's going to come down the pipe, you know that the work you're doing is going to benefit your people more in the long run than stressing about the people that don't want to do anything. And that's kind of where we got it. You know, we kind of got to develop a selective coldness where... you know, we're cold to people that, you know, we're warm and inviting. It's not to say we just completely shut them out. But when it comes to doing what you got to do, you know, you can't let other people get in the way of that. And that's kind of where we have to be as a community. Like, this story of OJ, you seeing the way people are responding to it, you know, it is disappointing because people are acting like Jay-Z is the first person. He's the prophet. You know what I'm saying? He might as well be Farah Muhammad for all we know right now. Wallace Farah. But, you know, hey, what can you do about it? You know what I'm saying? Do we waste that energy telling them to shut the fuck up and read a book? Or do we keep on plowing forward and understand that at some point, even if they don't catch on, their children going to benefit from what we're doing and their children going to catch on?
Hey, I hear what y'all saying, but all I want to say is this Hov, R-O-C, no one can do it better. It's the Rock. I'm throwing up a Rock symbol right now, baby.
Man, you fake. You phony. Hey, man, don't make me pull out them ether lyrics.
Hey, Joe about to get a diss record put out on him. Talking reckless. B. Hey, drop a bomb on him. Where my flex bomb at him, man?
You and Flex can get that ether.
Yo, okay. You lie. You worship him.
Shut up, Flex. That boy.
You lie.
That's funny. That was funny, man.
I don't watch Flex like that, so I don't know what y'all talking
about. Nah, me neither. Only time I end up watching Flex is if they got one of them cats on the freestyle and actually saying some stuff, so... but other than that, our next topic, you know, we got to talk about that Umar and No Neck Rolling. Got to get on.
No Neck Rolling, huh?
Hey, hold on. Your dude was like, not on my show, will not use racial epithets on my show. No racial epithets. We will not refer to another black person on my show. Yo, his neck was moving.
But I'm going to teach Hillary Clinton how to do the Dougie, though. I will do that. I will teach Hillary Clinton how to do the Dougie. And I'm going to say, we're going to ambush you for talking about raising the consciousness of the black people.
Rolling you can say whatever you want. You can say whatever. But you will not on my show, use racial epithets. You know what I do?
Roland Martin, you a duck, man. Roland, like, the month ain't even over. And Roland, guess what? You have won this month's Sit Your Dumb Ass Down Award.
Yeah.
We got to get a sound effect for that.
We got to, man. Because look at him, boy. Look at it, like... when
he is a damn duck, though.
Yeah, he's a straight duck. He's a straight duck. I mean, like, I've seen Roland have white people on his show and not necessarily grill them or set them up like that. And then what's up with the lady with the Jerry curl?
Come on, man. You're smarter than that. Come on,
no,
man.
No, you're smarter than that for still having the Jerry curl.
Hey, first of all, I'll point this out, man. When Ronald Martin, can't even pronounce the name. Ronald Martin had, what's the alt-right guy? Richard Spencer. Richard Spencer on the show. He, like, it was so terribly done that it looked like Richard Spencer was just like, yo, I signed this dude. But then you get on here with Umar, and, like, here's the one thing about that interview. Let's start from the beginning. The whole interview was sparked because of what he said. This is all to Ronald's mouth himself. Black Twitter was talking about this. First of all, I hate the term Black Twitter. That shit is so fucking corny. Nobody cares about some goddamn soul trolls on Twitter. Like, who cares? They're just as bad as the rest of the trolls. Just these trolls just happen to be black. They're still soul trolls. So the fact that you're sitting here taking credence from some soul trolls who are just trolling, and you know they're trolling because they're Black Twitter, they're trolling, why would you start a whole show or base a whole show around that? Why couldn't you come in and have an actual intellectual conversation with the man, get some understanding, that way you can enrich and enlighten your viewers? He didn't want to do that at all.
But ain't Black Twitter been going in on Umar for the last...
Soul trolls. Yo, I hate the fact they call it Black Twitter. Just call them trolls. That's all they are.
Well, I don't know what they are because I'm not on Twitter. I always thought the term was, like, when I first heard the term, I actually went to blacktwitter.com expecting to find something. I didn't find nothing. And then somebody later told me it was just a hashtag underneath posts made by black people. I was like,
they're not all black people. That's the thing. It's not all black people, and it's not like the typical everyday black person. They're some damn soul trolls. That's all they are, man. That's it.
Well, I just thought it was fascinating that you think you can type in a hashtag on a social media site and take the temperature of the black community. I was like, damn, I'm not even on Twitter. Like, who speaks for me?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. These guys do not speak for anybody. They don't. They're just internet trolls. That's all they are.
And then I was trying to figure out, well, how big is Black Twitter? Because if it's like 3 or 4 million black people, then that's, you know, okay, whatever. But if it's just like 10 or 15 black people on Twitter, like, what are we talking about here? Like, I don't, the whole, like, the term, it doesn't bother me because I'm kind of ignorant, but I don't understand it, and nobody has ever been able to explain it to me in a way that makes me understand it better, if that makes sense. Somebody said, well, it's just a hashtag. Well, why does a simple hashtag get so much media popular? Like, how does that happen?
That it's just the fact that he started the interview off that. That's the part that bothered me. It's just like, yo, if you're going to come and you're going to interview somebody, don't base it off a bunch of internet trolls who you don't know, who are just saying things to get notoriety, to get retweets and all that stupid stuff. Actually do your job and come with some damn interview questions, X, Y, and Z.
But ain't that his MO, though, to kind of attack black people and
yeah, the black people, but why, though? But when he has somebody on there, he can, you know...
Roland Martin a bitch.
Okay, Joe said it. But when he has, like, different people on there that aren't as controversial, it's a whole different setting. No. The panel's different. The whole vibe is different.
But look, you cannot bring somebody on. If the only thing you should have asked him about was the school, for you to question the man's lineage, for you to question his credentials.
Oh yeah, he was looking for a fight.
Right, and for you to question the fact that he is promoting black families and black love as a black person, you got a problem with that? And then you're gonna allow the lady with the dry Jerry curl to say, I know you're smarter than that. And then you're gonna allow the little coon Republican dude to call him a liar. But then you get mad when he called the coon Republican dude what he is, a coon. Like, you're gonna get mad at that. Like, come on, Roland, you a bitch. You a whole hoe, Roland. Like,
you will not.
You cannot. You can't operate like that. You cannot. You cannot bring somebody on your show and do that to them, especially when what they're doing is going to help you and your people and your family. Roland, are you damn foolish? White people do not like you. That's why your ass on TV One and not on CNN no more, Roland. Get it through your mind.
I think with Roland Martin, and I got to put this in perspective, when he does news, he does it, and Umar was right in one thing. His panel, that show does not represent the average everyday black person in America. Roland Martin kind of caters to that, you know, Tom Joyner, Cruz type, older black crowd, you know, they in sororities, they like to do that fuck shit and all that good stuff.
Bougie old people.
Yes, okay, yes, you said it, fuck it. All right, that's who he tends to cater to. He isn't doing news that's actually controversial, that's actually... He'll address black issues, you know, things that's important to black people. When it comes to, like, speaking in terms of independence and, you know, and stuff like that, Ronald Martin's not going to speak like that. And he'll, this is the only black news show in America. I don't know what you, man, even still, you're not talking about shit. You're just talking about all the stuff, the popular news outlets. We need you to communicate how to get our communities correct, not just a bunch of bullshit and fluff. So, to me, I thought that was a missed opportunity on his part to actually get understanding from Dr. Umar and actually embrace his message and actually, you know, because you're not going to agree with everything Umar says. Everybody knows that. Like, come on. The guy's a dynamic speaker, one of the best speakers in America. But you're not going to agree. And that's with any speaker. You're not going to agree with every damn thing they say. And you shouldn't. The part in your mind should be like, all right, let me research this because I don't agree with it. You shouldn't agree with everything they say. But Ronald Martin, what he should have did with that interview is sat down, try to find common ground, try to get an understanding versus just come out, people say your education's fake. Give me that. Some people say you're not kin to Frederick Douglass. Like, nobody gives a shit about that. Nobody gives a shit.
Come on. Roland, come on, man. Everything about that interview was disrespectful. Everything about that interview was disrespectful. Like, Roland, like, we knew you was a hoe. We knew that. But you've reached, because you reached hoe status when you was up there sucking and jiving with Hillary Clinton. That's my thing. Like, you have Hillary Clinton come on your show doing her presidential race and don't grill her while she's doing her presidential race. Like, you kiss her ass. And she's running for president, and you need to be grilling her, but you grill this man by his family lineage and all these other things.
That
Umar saying let's say Umar is lying, and I'm not saying he is, but let's say Umar is lying about being a relative of Frederick Douglass. How does that hurt our community?
Not at all.
I mean, here's the deal, right? And even Roland, he didn't really prove anything with any of his questions. This is one thing that you... If you actually prove the man is lying at some point, like, because that's relevant in terms of congruency of the message, the speaker, and the lifestyle. But the fact that you asked him, like, Umar Johnson, as stated by the family of Frederick Douglass, when you read their statement, they said, Mr. Johnson is very careful about the words he uses. And even he is. I've heard a lot of his speeches. He's never claimed to be a direct blood descendant of Frederick Douglass.
Right. Not
he's
once.
Never claimed
he said
that.
He was a relative.
That's all he said was he was a blood relative, a blood relation. So in that, you can't, like, I could technically say I'm a blood relation to Frederick Douglass. I'm sure if you trace our lines back, they join together somewhere. So, like, that you really, and that's something that, you know, I put together when I first started hearing about Umar and hearing him say that, you know, like, okay, well, that's bullshit. That don't mean that. Let's just throw that out right out the way. That's just there to gain the attention of people that care about such things. But, you know, like, the crazy part of the interview to me was, out of all of the controversial things they said, and I'll tell you, I was mad at the interview, but I was only mad because I'm not an Umar fan. Unlike Jay-Z, Umar is somebody I actually don't like. But I don't attack the man in public, and I don't go out my way to belittle the man, because he does say some things that I agree with, and I think somewhere in his heart he really does want what's best for the people. So I was upset because I actually had to defend somebody that I don't like and I disagree with over 70% of the time. That being said, they chose to argue with him on a point that there really is no argument about. The man said, if you're pro-black and you marry somebody that's not black, it's a contradiction. That is a fact. Like, that's not right. Even, that's like saying the sun rises. It does. You know, like you can't come to me and, no, the sun don't rise. The sun does not rise. The sun didn't rise this morning. No, the sun rises. If you're pro-black and you marry somebody that's white, it's a contradiction. That doesn't mean you can't be pro-whatever. That doesn't mean you can't be for your people or you can't want to see your people in a better place. But it does mean that your lifestyle and your message contradict each other if you are somebody that speaks about being pro-black, accepting blackness, loving your blackness, and all these other terms we use. That is a bit of a contradiction. Why would they choose to argue with him about that? And that's really the only statement he made in terms of white people. All of the other countries, like the black woman, he made a statement about black women not getting married. I would expect the black woman to have statistics to push that back and argue him on that point, especially her being a black woman. Why the fuck are you choosing to argue him on, you know, and then they Roland Martin went down the line of questions. Look, this is the other thing the man said. It's hard for me to respect you when you marry a white person. That is a personal belief statement for him. So why would you go down the list naming all of these people as if that's going to change his mind? He never said black people as a whole should not respect them. He said it's hard for me to respect you.
No, fool.
You know, he's just going down the line like this means anything. Like really. Like this. Look, if I say, look, and this is just a hypothetical. If I say I hate white people, you can name all the white people you want to name. That's not going to change the fact that I feel how I feel about white people. And it's the same thing the man said. Like, I did. The whole interview to me was just stupid. Like, it was like 20 minutes of just stupidity. Complete stupidity. And again, I'm fired up because I actually had to defend Umar Johnson.
And I think that's what my problem was, is because here's the thing. I'm one of those people, I really personally don't give a damn who you marry, X, Y, Z, but I understood his point. Because I've been in situations, and I'm pretty sure people have later in certain points in their life when you dated somebody or know somebody who dated somebody, and they say, nah, then, you know, I only date Asian, only date white, only date Mexican. There's nothing wrong with that. I see nothing wrong with that. When people say, oh, yeah, I only date, okay, cool, you looking out for the fam, you know what I'm saying? You know, everybody wins, you know, when the family's in. I get it. I'm not mad at that. But when a black man says black men should marry black women, and that's a controversial statement, that's hard for me to grasp the concept. Like, how is that controversial? He even said it. Like, black men failed black women. You know, we did this.
And she, but my thing with her, with that lady is, look, like, he is talking about the empowerment of you. What do you want?
Yes.
And you have a problem with that? Like, you really have a problem with that? Like, seriously? Like come on, come on.
She's a stereotypical black woman, didn't she? The exact image of what they say black women are.
Right. It's like, so, and you look at somebody, it's 100 and something million white people, and you know them all? You know, lady, you won't know enough to not know that Derrick girl. I ain't gonna let her know that Derrick girl. But seriously, though, it's like, lady, first of all, I don't know if she married or not. But if she married, she probably married to a white dude, because I can't. Well, they are Roland Martin out there too, but they are like you. I don't that mindset. Like he's talking about empowering you, and you have a problem with that. Like, you are not pro black if you marry white. It's just that simple. That's not hard to wrap your mind around. How are you truly for the advancement of your people if you're not even about making sure your people are continued on this earth? You're not even about making sure that the lineage and the culture and the heritage and the phenotypes and all these things, and especially the same thing, I listened to a follow-up interview that Umar was saying, because he was being interviewed by these three people, and one of the girls was biracial, and she was saying, well, you know, one of my parents is white and one of them is black, so what about that? And Umar was like, well, think about it, like, black people and the black family are under attack. They've been under attack, and we're still under attack. So, and my thing for people like this, to get him to think about, all right, the black family is under attack. That's why black men need to marry black women, and black women need to marry black men. It's like, if I was trying to break in your, if me and you in school, and every day, all day, I pull your hair. I come up to you and pull your hair. I'm just pulling your hair, pulling your hair, pulling your hair. Every day, all day, pulling your hair, pulling your hair, pulling your hair. At what point do you do something about me pulling your hair, or create systems in place to prevent me from pulling your hair, and create systems that's going to empower you so I can't pull your hair? At some point, you're going to do that. So you're going to do that on an individual level. So you're going to tell black people on the whole that we know that the family is under attack. We know black lives are under attack. But don't try to protect yourself. Just let it happen. That's basically what they're saying. If you are not pro-black, if you marry white. And that's just, I don't give a damn who you are.
Well, I won't, and this is me personally, I won't say you're not pro-black if you marry white. I will say you're a contradiction. I will say that because, you know, there are examples out there of black people that, you know, Choke Diop was one.
Diop get a pass though. I mean, let's just be real. Diop did a lot.
And what I'm essentially saying is, like, there are certain circumstances where I've known people who, before they realized, before they became aware, they were married, and they were married to a white person.
But that person at that point not pro-black though. Then they became aware.
And they became aware, but they weren't going to divorce their wife or their husband. You know, and for the most part, as far as I know, their wife or their husband was supportive of their blackness. So in those instances, I would say, I don't think you can be pro-black and be marrying a white person. I will say that. But I do think if you're already married to a white person and you come into consciousness, if you will, there is no law that says you can't support your people because you married to a white person. But I do think that even to that, like, I look to the biracial kids. Mixed race kids have been used by so many cultures and so many different situations to kind of take over and destroy that culture and conquer nations, if you will. We really severely handicap ourselves as a people if we create a barrier between us and the mixed race children that want to be associated with us. Now, I'm not talking about calling a mixed kid that want to be white. Let that motherfucker be white. But if there's a mixed race kid out there that wants to accept their black ancestry, I don't think that it's to our benefit to push them away. And we run the risk of doing that every time I don't even think this is I just don't even understand how that got to be such a point of contention. You know what I'm saying?
Of course. I mean, of course. How would I say this? When we are truly talking about that true pro-blackness, when we're truly talking about black people holding each other down, like, I'm with you. Like, if you because while you were saying that if you already have married white, and then you come to pro-blackness, I don't know, in my mind, I'm thinking you may have, that cognitive dissonance may come in, and you may or may not, you know, because ideologies change. You know, things could change, but I'm 100% with you. Like, you can't already be pro-black. And see, that's what I see a lot, because when I say you can't be pro-black and marry white, I mean, because I've seen people who claim to be pro-black and then go marry white.
No, like, right. I feel you on that. I feel you on that. But, you know, like, to the other point, it's just it's an interesting conversation where we did a study, a social media study anyways, where, you know, I was in this interracial relationship group on Facebook, and some of the people were pro-black. It was a couple thousand people in the group, and I decided to do a little unofficial survey. It was, you know, it's nothing scientific, nothing official, so it can't be used for no school studies or nothing. But I did find that most of the people that were pro-black became pro-black after they got married to that white person. And even when I asked some of them if they felt the same way now that they felt then, would they still marry the person they married, a good chunk of them said no. They would not have married this person. They wouldn't even dated this person if they were in the same mind state they're in now. So to me, that illustrates that if we're truly serious about being pro-black and raising a generation that's proud of their culture and their heritage, it's kind of a waste of energy to start by demonizing the adults that's already married to white people. Like, they're lost causes. They're done. Go to their children.
Yeah. I mean, because to me, I mean, to be honest, and this is just Joseph Ward. If you were... To me, it's going to be hard for you to really get that full scope of that blackness if you already married white. Because if you, cause like they're saying, okay, I know all this information. I know where all this is, this information, these things, and where we are with white people. But I'm going to make this work. I mean, I'm not in that situation, so I can't fully speak on that, so I'm not going to try to. But in my mind, it's like, okay, some kind of cognitive dissonance or something will start working against it, and it may have issues and it may not, because if you're truly growing in your blackness, and you know, it's going to kind of, to me, and I could be wrong, it's kind of going to kind of be hard. But even to the point that you were saying about the mixed race children, a child cannot, and Umar said this too, a child, it's not a child's fault who their parents are. So nobody should be demonizing mixed-race children. You're going to have some mixed-race black and white children who identify with black and some who identify with white. I mean, hey, it is what it is. But I don't think those children should be demonized because who their parents chose to lay down with, because there are some mixed-race. Now, you're going to have some people who have a problem with mixed-race children. I'm not one of them. But some people are going to have a problem with all that. But to me, they should not be demonized. But I do think one of the greatest things that we can do, like we have to do as black people, is love each other, marry each other, and continue our heritage and our lineage, and not try to get so caught up in this American ideal that we want to just amalgamate with everybody else, and just in 50 years everybody look the same. I don't want to live in that damn America. Like, why my people can't be my people? So I do think we have to work hard to hold on to our heritage and our culture, also because we're under attack, we're at war.
Well, there is a school of thought, and I actually agreed with it for a long period of time. And it actually, you know, it's based off white ideology, which basically says one drop of blood makes you a nigger. And we all know that's white mentality. Black people have accepted it for some reason. But, you know, that's slave master thinking. But with that being said, our genes are stronger than white people's genes. So if we just fuck all of them and create a new race of people, they'd be gone. You know what I'm saying? And I actually agree with that for a long period of time, because, you know, if you go down the line, if a mixed race child sleeps with a black baby, the baby of that union, if a mixed race person sleeps with a black person and creates a baby, that baby has very black features. Like, the whiteness is almost completely erased. And that is if there's even any whiteness really apparent, because I've seen a lot of mixed race kids where the only thing that really might be an indication is the skin color. Other than that, so I mean, you know, like we got to think about it in different levels. Like if we're coming from a genetic standpoint, and that's why this whole who you sleep with conversation, it deserves a more complex analysis than it's getting. But at the same time, I don't feel like it deserves as much energy as it's getting, because if we promote a culture of self-love, that is a natural side effect of loving yourself and who you are and your culture and your people. A natural side effect of that is you're going to want to make babies with somebody that's in your culture group. So it's not even a conversation that technically needs to be had. You know what I'm saying? So, but even to that point, if we're always saying on a genetic level we're the superior people, then the best way to get rid of a stubborn, more developed economically people that are in a position to oppress you is to just fuck the shit out of them. Just make babies with them. Breed them out of existence. It's a contradiction to me that black people can say we have the superior dominant genes, but then on the same time say, but black people are breeding us out of existence. That's a contradiction, unless you're saying that culturally they're taking all of these mixed race babies and making them white, in which case that's a cultural problem more so than it is a genetic one, because the same culture that turns that mixed race baby white also turns that black baby white. So, you know, like, we got to talk about it on a bunch of different levels. Look, I'm all for black-on-black relationships. I love black females. I'm going to be completely honest. I don't give a damn who I offend. Personally, I don't find white women attractive. That's not to say that they're all ugly or anything like that. That's just me saying that my preference is not white women. So it is what it is on that. I think two black people together, regardless of how ugly, crazy, dirty, filthy, or whatever they might look, I think it's a wonderful, beautiful thing. I love seeing black kids running around in circles with their ashy hair and the girls in the goddamn pigtails with the goddamn barrettes that's been out for the last 100 years in their head. All of that is wonderful. It's beautiful. I love it to death. I really do love it to death. But I think if we just focus on developing a culture of true self-love, we would eliminate the need to have these conversations about interracial relationships altogether, especially considering 92% of black people are married to another black person anyway.
I mean,
hold on, before you go, Joe. That's the part a lot of people don't, like, fail to understand. It's a cultural thing, too, because you see it in the Mexican community, the Asian community. They teach their kids, you know, to marry within their own race and stuff like that. And I don't see a problem with that. Like being pro-black, being pro-white, being pro-Asian, being pro-Mexican, you're Mexican, right? So it makes sense for you to be pro-Mexican. When people say, oh, you can't be, if you're pro-black and you believe that, you know, black people should marry black people, white people, I'm cool with that. I don't see a big problem with that. I just feel like when somebody does say that, black people are the first ones to be like, no, it should be colorblind, we should be able to do this. And that part I didn't understand. And from that interview with Dr. Umar, I saw that a lot. And I just didn't, like, why are we one of the only races that are saying, you know what, just marry whoever you want to marry and do whatever you want to do. Like, I didn't get that part.
Well, though, because, I mean, those are the people within black America who are trying to identify as American, who are trying to identify with the larger culture. I mean, most of these black people, even hear them saying that on the Breakfast Club and all these other things. Well, I just think that you should tell your kids, because they're saying that you should tell your kids to, when they're young, to let them date who they want to date, but when they get in their 20s, teach them to love black people. That's ass backwards.
Yeah, that is.
Like, you teach your kids young to love who they are, love their people, love. If you're a black man, you should be loving black women. And to me, like, the most important part about that just right now is because the total attack on our culture and our people. But it's, like Pat saying, if you teach black love from the beginning, a lot of this stuff would be eliminated. Like, black people would learn how to love each other. We wouldn't even be having these debates. Like, you should not have a debate between a black man and a black woman about a black man telling black men to marry black women. Like, that's just ignorant.
But that's the culture piece always comes up missing. And that's the piece that even when he was talking to them and he was talking about show me anywhere in history where white people have en masse done things. And he was talking about white culture. Mm-hmm. But he didn't say white culture. He said white systems. They went to the political system with LBJ, which we can get into the background. That's a whole other show. But essentially, he was right. But because he didn't use culture, the point got lost in the sauce. And that's the same thing. You know, like, we're so quick to disregard our culture to fall in line with the dominant society or the dominant cultural narrative, and that's because we aren't taught culture at all. We aren't taught cultural appreciation. We aren't taught cultural understanding. We aren't taught historical cultural context. We aren't taught, basically, you still got grown-ass black people running around talking about black people don't have culture. How the fuck can you be a culture group and not have culture? The shit that, look, anytime you get a group of people living together, if they live together for more than five months, they develop a culture amongst each other. Culture is a natural, intrinsic part of human behavior and social development. There is no society without culture. There is no nation. There is no group of people. There is no race. Culture is one of the defining characteristics of human group psychology. I don't understand why culture keeps getting lost in the sauce.
To me, it's because people are stuck on the notion that, okay, all of the things that made us African were stripped from us. I mean, a lot of stuff was stripped, but a lot of stuff was mixed with American culture, and a lot of stuff has been developed. Like, we complain about them stealing our culture all the time, but then come back and say that we have no culture. I mean,
Jamie, you were going to say something before I cut you off?
My only thing, because, you know, when it comes to interracial relationships, and I think both of you you made good points. You know, if you're already married to him, then you become conscious. And, you know, Joe, if you can't be pro, I get it. My main thing is when a black, like Joe said it again, when a black man says black men should marry black women and people in the uproar about it, that's controversial, that means we don't love ourselves.
Right.
To me, that's the only thing. And, like, after that, the interview, it wasn't the interview itself, but it was people's response to it that kind of made me depressed, because I don't even think black people realize that we don't even love ourselves. We try to intermingle and do things. And I saw people married to other black people and still being like, oh, we should be able to do this. It's just like, but when you came to marry somebody, you made sure you married another black person. And, again, it's not a knock to any other race. It's just about us loving ourselves. How are we going to rebuild our own community if we can't love ourselves?
But once first, again, the black Americans are the only ones who are criticized for marrying their own people, because the same person who say, well, you're a racist for telling black people to marry black people, well, hell, your damn parents racist for having you. Because last I checked, if you white, your daddy white and your mama white, so they racist for getting together and making you. But the black people are the only ones who are criticized for telling their people to love their people. Nobody goes into the Asian community and tell Asian people, hey, don't tell that Asian girl to marry that Asian man. Don't tell that Chinese girl to marry that. They don't do that. They leave other people alone. And so it's like black people, we... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know why? Because Asian people don't get on national TV and say it. They say it in their homes to their children. And even though their children might say, my mama told me, you'll never hear their mama say it.
And you know why, Pat? Because they got something that you got. They got codes.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, and even to that, you know, Joe, you're right. And that's something we talk about all the time. Everybody always making these, black people especially, making these exceptions for what we can and we can't do. You know, you can have an all-girls school. You can have an all-gay lesbian school. You can have an all-Hispanic school. You can't have an all-black school, though. That's racist. Meanwhile,
right,
you got these segregation of private schools that are all white, that are petitioning the government to be free from the school board and winning. Over 50 cases of them winning have been found so far in the last 10 years. But you can't have an all-black summer camp neither because you're racist. Never mind all of these other camps who have prices so high that the average black person can't hope to send their kid there. And I don't know why we would in the first place, but that reminds me of the point we was getting into before the show started, because a lot of people like to talk about how you should marry for love, this, that, and the third. Interesting point that other people have made. I'll make two real quick points. One of the interesting points is that it's always interesting when you find the upper income black person that's married to the lower income white person. And that's only interesting in relation in comparison to how rare it is that you see it on the other side. You know, how rare is it that you find a poor or rich white person that's marrying a slum, fat, nasty, ugly, filthy black person? You know how rare that is. I'm not saying it don't happen, but I am saying it's rare. But then on the other end, like, I really think we probably need to have a show dedicated to breaking down love. People honestly seem to think love is some shit that just happens. Look, love is a interaction of chemical bonds that occurs based on preconceived notions, political affiliations, social status and standing, and cultural closeness. You know, and that's evident. And if you, like, put it this way, when was the last time you heard of anybody that wasn't a crackhead falling in love with a crackhead in the middle of them being a crackhead? If love just happens, we'd have some cases of that, wouldn't we? Wouldn't we have some cases of these random events where two people that are completely different worlds meeting each other and just falling in love, not on some, oh, he's Middle Eastern and she's South Californian, not on no shit like that, but on some shit like he's a motherfucking Muslim extremist and she's a goddamn Christian extremist, on some shit like that, like where they really want to kill each other, and right as they was about to pull the trigger because they was aimed at each other, they just fell in love, put the guns down, and started making babies.
Hey, look, I wrote a blog article about this a while ago titled Love is Blind with a question mark behind it. And I wrote this because I was in the class, I was doing classes at this high school, and listening to these young girls talk about love and how love is blind and all these things here. First of all, love is only blind if you decide to close your eyes. That's first of all. And I say that because to fall in love with somebody, you have to constantly put emotion and thought into that person to actually develop those type of feelings for somebody. Being physically attracted to somebody, being infatuated, and being in love, first of all, are three different things. So me, I'm physically attracted to you, okay? So now more curiosity comes, so I'm infatuated with you. Now,
I'm about to get deep, man. That's a whole different show you about to go into.
I ain't gonna go all the way.
Joe gonna take it there anyway.
I ain't gonna go all the way. I'm just saying, but like, you have to, like, with that love is blind thing, you have to put time into really devoting your energy to somebody to fall in love with them. So that isn't no love is blind thing. Like, I make a conscious choice. To every girl that I've devoted myself to, I've liked, I visited, I was in a relationship to, because I chose to do that. Every girl that I've had sex with, that's because I've chose to do that. They were all my choices. Nobody made me do that. It wasn't some kind of blind thing that I just tripped. No, I choose to exclusively be with black women. That's my choice. There's no love is blind thing. That's what I choose to do. So well, people have to get off of that.
The idea, let's clarify, love is an emotion, but that's a recent development. To be more blunt and I think, in my opinion, more on point. Love is basically an addiction. An addiction based off of a fetish, or an addiction grown out of a fetish. You know what I'm saying? And when I say the fetish, I mean a fetish. You have an addiction to a person, and you have a sexual fetish attached to that person. That's what love is. It is not a hardcore emotion. That's why people have such difficulty explaining it and describing it.
Right.
It is an addiction. Now, that being said, in order for you to devote the energy required to truly fall in love with somebody, they have to be in a place that socially and culturally and politically and economically acceptable for you. That in and of itself eliminates the love is blind thing, because 99% of women out there would tell you that they would never fall in love, with all certainty and with all honesty, with a homeless dude with no job, no prospects, and no future.
Mm-hmm. Right, so love ain't blind.
That kind of eliminates the love is blind argument
right
there.
Right, right.
Like, yeah, so, we just got to get into the realities of love and stop letting people get away with these cute little phrases that love is this and love is that. No, love is an addiction. What keeps people together is not love.
Right.
I've been married for a long period of time on two instances. I can tell you with all certainty, not just in talking to myself, but also in the time I spent volunteering at old folks' homes, talking to people that have been married for 60, 70, 80 years, there are lots of times when you're in a relationship where you don't feel love anymore for that other person. What keeps you together at that point is commitment and loyalty.
Right.
So love comes and goes. And the other part that people seem to skip over is that love can be created.
Yeah.
You can create love for just about anybody or anything. Spend enough time with somebody, give them enough energy.
You're going to begin to develop feelings of love for them.
Right. So I don't understand why we've allowed Disney to corrupt us so. And I solely blame Disney.
You got to love everybody. Love everybody.
Here you go. Oh, yo, here you go, OJ.
Okay.
but seriously, though, I mean, but, you know, all that love tangent, you know, for those, you know, bring it back in, that love tangent still sparked out of people making up these little phrases as to why it's not okay for black men and black women to be married, you know, and bringing the background to the Roland Martin interview, you know, and to kind of start wrapping this show up. Before we wrap the show up, we want to wrap this part up because I do want to say one thing before we wrap it up. But we have to, like, Roland Martin should be boycotted. Like, he should be boycotted. Like, if you want to boycott something, boycott Roland Martin. Do it now, because he needs to realize that his actions are not acceptable and it hurts the community and things that he's doing. He should be boycotted. But before we wrap the show up, though, I do want to say this. Hey, black men, we got to get in your ass real quick. Black men, we got to stop, like, standing around and watching our women be abused by white men and other people. When a black woman is being abused, beaten, choked, dragged down to the ground, you pulling your phone out is not enough. You a man. Do something. I'm watching the video. And the reason why I'm saying this is because I was watching the video earlier this day. And I don't know what the situation was, but this Walmart worker decided he was going to tackle this black woman to the ground, this big fat white dude. And he just tackling her to the ground. And the only person that was around to help, that was trying to help, was this white woman who was screaming at the top of her lungs for her to get off. And she was going off on the men, because there was like 10 men standing around that you could see in the camera, and black men, and nobody was doing nothing but just standing up with their phones out. Black men, that's unacceptable. I don't know about that.
Cowardly shit, man.
It is. That's unacceptable. Look. We got to do something very different, and I, because Because what's probably going, what we don't want to happen is the men who care start getting into physical altercations with the men who don't care. But that right there is something that might happen, because those who care, we're not going to stand around too much longer and watch those who don't care just watch our women be abused. That's unacceptable behavior. So I do want to leave that on your minds. Look here, black men, we got to do a better job. We got to step it up. If you see a black woman in trouble, damn it, go help. Pull it, fuck your phone, go help.
Facts.
Damn. Hey, man, so check us out. We're going to, next week on the Freedom Train, we will have Mr. Sam Carter, who's the founder of Carter's Corner, come on the show. He's a real community man here in the Tallahassee, Florida area. He has a lot of community efforts going on. He's going to come on the show, and we're going to talk to him. We're going to chop it up and have a little fun with Sam Carter. And then also remember, August is the month where here on the Freedom Train, we will be doing our mental health awareness campaign. So the month of August, make sure you tune into our shows. We're going to have some mental health professionals. We're going to have people who've dealt with mental health issues. We're going to have a lot of PSAs, all types of information. So make sure you tune in to the Freedom Train radio station, because to the Freedom Train podcast series, excuse me, because we're working to promote black people to do better in working on our mental health, and we need your help. So until then, remember, hey, stay black, love being black, and if you don't, I don't know what to tell you, because I love being black. Peace.